listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. As a licensed private investigator and certified instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Having escorted thousands of teens to specialized schools and programs, returned hundreds of runaways, and retrieved many abducted children, I bring a unique outlook on what our kids are going through and what can be done to help them thrive. And if that doesn't work, how you can survive. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and international parental abduction. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help. Today, my guest from one of those programs is Randy Oakley, the founder and president of Aspiro Wilderness Adventure Therapy Programs. Randy is here to talk about Stalking the Stalker, a profile of people stalking our children. With Randy's 22 years of experience working with youth, he is seeing a disturbing trend of predators that are successfully getting into our teens' lives. Randy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alan. It's great to be here.
Well, I got to tell you that we sent out some information in regards to you being on the show, and this topic has certainly struck a nerve with some of our listeners. Please, tell us your view of the problem today.
Well, one of the things we're seeing is that, you know, obviously stalking is nothing new. It's been going on for generations of time. But one of the things we're seeing is with the information technology boom, MySpace, Facebooks, texting, instant messaging, and so forth, we're seeing that the ability of the stalker or the predator to get into our teenagers' lives and to take over their lives before a parent even knows what's going on is dramatically increased. And once it happens, it's a several-year process to bring healing both to the child and to the family. And so one of the things is obviously is how to prevent those from happening to start off with. But as we go through it, today I've got a couple different stories or case studies that we've dealt with in the recent years that we'll talk about. But as we go through it, one of the things that we're seeing, you know, it used to be the stalker, it used to be somebody that lived in the city or the neighborhood. Sometimes they were a friend of the family, sometimes they weren't. And, you know, they would come to the door, they'd start hanging around the house or around the school. As a mom and dad, you kind of got a feel for it and looks and said, hey, something's not right here. But now with technology the way it is, these guys are getting into our girls' lives, our children's lives before we even know about it. And, you know, we don't even see it coming.
Yeah, well, exactly. I know that it's being blindsided. Now, I know that there are different types of stalking, and I mean, as an investigator, there are cases that I've worked on. One in particular was more from the standpoint of the stalker who gets them on a chat room, starts talking to them. One in particular was a vampire chat room, and then gets them to meet them somewhere. In this case, it was at a mall. From that standpoint, they literally take them, and the parents don't hear from them, in this case, for 4 months. I know some of the situations that you've been seeing are a little bit different in the sense that it may be someone who got in contact with them over the internet, but now they're somewhat of a boyfriend and they're still kind of in the picture. Tell us a little bit about that part.
Well, to start off with, though, Alan, is one of the cases that we've dealt with in recent years is actually more what you just talked about. And so obviously this is the extreme case, and that's not probably the one that we want to focus on the most today. But it is noteworthy because in this particular case, it started with the MySpace, then instant messaging on MySpace, and over a period of time, all of a sudden this girl who never met this guy is in love with him and thinks that she's found her soulmate. They're exchanging changing pictures of daily activities over the internet to start off with, and those pictures eventually became into nudist and sexy and phone sex and that kind of stuff. And then eventually, of course, this particular young lady was from Nevada area, and the guy was from Arkansas, but this guy got into her life and made an arrangement for a meeting, and it turned out to be like a kidnapping, and the FBI was involved, private investigators, and quite honestly, years of therapy that got.
Well, how did he set up the meet? Did he send her a ticket? Did he come to her, or was there look, you run away and meet me in the middle?
He actually came to her and said, "I'll come hang out with you," and then convinced her to alienate her parents, which he had been doing that process for over a period of time anyway. And then, of course, they met, and she decided to get in the car willingly with him. And, this is, again, kind of a dramatic story. But in the long run, what we finally found out through the use of private investigators and the FBI and so forth is that this guy was selling pornography to an overseas porn site. And the suspicion was that we were never able to prove, at least that I'm aware of with the FBI, but the suspicion was is that he was trying to actually take her overseas to a foreign country and get out of Dodge there. And so,
well, this actually ties into some of the other shows that we've done, and an issue that that I'm very aware of, which is the human trafficking. And this is another way. I mean, it's one of the ways that that these predators get these kids is by picking them up as runaways. In some cases, this one actually enticed her to go with them, but in many cases they're also going after the ones that have already run away. There's already been enough of an issue at home to where they felt like they needed to run away. That's leaving them out there, to be preyed upon. Now, what are some tips that you might give parents who feel like this is something that's starting to happen? They feel the alienation, or they're starting to have their child say that the love of this child or this other person is now more important than their family.
Oh, the tips are the same that every professional and everyone else gives out there. It's the same old stuff. Basically, know where your kids are, what they're doing. Some people might find it intrusive, but I keep track of what my children are doing on their MySpace accounts and Facebook accounts, even the phone records that they use. It's not something like I go check every single day, but it's just knowing. And then, of course, talking to your kids as openly as you possibly can is always the sane advice. But some of it's just good old-fashioned values. I have, unfortunately, my daughters got their mother's looks, and they're knocked down dead. They're gorgeous girls. And so I've got guys coming to the door all the time. In fact, just, even over the weekend here, we were down surfing down in San Diego area, and, we walk out of the beach, and I've got guys coming over to see my 17-year-old or 18-year-old daughter now, almost instantly. And it's just part of the process. But part of the thing that we've done with our children is when the guys come to the door, they come to the door. There is no such thing as meeting them or, I'll text you when I get there and you run out the door and get in my car. No, it's old-fashioned, but they come in the door, we talk for a few minutes, and then they get to go out on the date or on the activity with my daughters and so forth. So,
yeah, well, and taking that part to an extreme, it reminds me of a friend of mine whose daughter, when it was time to go to the prom, and she was going with a senior, and he had the same rule, he must come to the door. When the guy came to the door, my friend was sitting at his desk cleaning his guns and said, "Just want you to know that she's the most important thing in my life."
Yes.
"We'll see you at midnight, right?"
Yes, exactly.
Well, we did get some listener questions in regards to this, and I want to ask one of them that sounds like it is very similar to one of the cases that I think you're going to be talking about. And this comes from someone who says, "I am so glad to see the topic of the show. Our 16-year-old daughter started secretly seeing an 18-year-old boy. She sneaks out at night, runs away for longer and longer periods of time. The most recent time, she was gone for almost 2 weeks. Our daughter says she loves him and will do whatever she has to be with him. The boy says, 'It's her life, leave her be.' His parents say, 'It's their life, leave them be.' The police have not been much help. What can we do? We're at our wit's end."
Wow, great question. And it does actually resemble exactly one of the stories that are cases that I've been working on for the last year. One of the tough pieces to this topic is identifying the difference between a bad relationship and a predator. And sometimes it's a fine line between the two, but basically one of the things that I look for immediately in this story, this question that this person is posing here, obviously you have a bad relationship at a bare minimum, and you may have a predator-stalking relationship. What I mean by bad relationship, for starters, is a young girl at 16, 17, 18 years old, yes, they can fall in love, and it can sometimes, you know, have lifelong meaning and everything else. But oftentimes they're also short-sighted enough and don't have enough life experience to know what real love really is. And in the process of that, real love is when you get married or run off together and in love, is that you're not only marrying that person, but you're actually marrying the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to kind of do your homework here. And this particular situation sounds like this girl is saying that she's willing to sacrifice her family for this boy. And the boy's family, the boy and the boy's family sound like that they're encouraging that. That they're
right.
Saying that, you know what, you know, your love for this boy, that their love for each other is more important than mom and dad. And in her short-sightedness, she'll realize that later on that that probably was a bad decision. But right now, that's definitely in the bad relationship category. One of the keys that I look for when we're trying to identify, is this just a bad relationship or is it, could it be more serious than this, is always the parent alienation factor.
Right.
And the parent alienation, if a guy is trying to encourage my daughter or anybody's child to separate or to be away from the mm-hmm. family, then there's already a big, huge red flag and you're in trouble.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. I mean, how insecure is somebody if they feel that the only way that they can have love from someone is for them to not love anybody else around them? I mean, that's pretty dysfunctional to start with and not a good way to start any relationship.
Absolutely. One of the keys, you know, just a recommendation to this parent, obviously if you feel like it, you're welcome to hit the websites and try and contact me, and I'll listen to you a little bit more and see if there's something we can do to help you in this process. But when you're talking about her running away, it sounds like for more than a few days at a time kind of a thing, she's sacrificing a lot of other things as far as her schooling and her other things that are going on in her life that are going to have lifelong consequences.
Well, you
need help now.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. And actually, this might be a good time. Go ahead. Tell our listeners what website they can go to gain more information, or if they have more questions or even want to expand upon the questions we've already asked.
Okay. Well, the websites that I'm involved with, the companies I'm involved with, goes to www.wherehealingstarts.com is how you can find me and my programs. And if you follow those links through, and you can send an email or even call the admissions director, and they'll get you in contact with me.
Okay, and that's great. And they're involved with multiple programs. So again, if you talk with them, they can probably, if not have a program that would work for you, but refer you to one that might be a better fit. Now, going along those lines, we do have another listener question that says, I have a 17-year-old teenager who is out of control, staying out all night, and no telling where he is. He used to be on the varsity football team, a straight-A student, and now he is cutting school and failing most of his classes. We're extremely worried and don't know who to turn to. Does your program treat kids like this?
Yes, and in answer to that question, I would want to know more information. Obviously, the key word that I just picked up on is he used to be. That's one of the things I always hear from parents all the time is they'll say, my son or my daughter used to be this way. And now they've changed. So something's happening in this young man's life that is totally turning him away from family, away from who he used to be, his core value system. And if you don't find out what that is and start to get some correction in his life, you're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Now going on, we've got another question, another listener question that says, it says, my husband and I adopted a son as a toddler who is now 17 years old. Recently, he connected with his birth mother. We supported our son's decision and knew in time this was going to happen. However, it's been a very stressful period for us as our son has pulled away from us emotionally. We all used to be, there's that word again, used to be a very open and sharing family in regards to sharing our feelings and what we were going through. Now he is spending more time alone in his room, often on the phone with his birth mom. We now feel like we've opened Pandora's box. She seems to be a very negative influence on him. We have tried to talk to her about this, and she becomes very defensive at times. Other times, she verbally attacks us as trying to blame, saying that we're trying to blame her for our failure with him. Do you have any ideas on how we can get her to discontinue contact, or is there a short-term program that he could go to that she wouldn't be able to contact him at? Wow, that's a long question.
With a lot of answers to it, actually, because now you're dealing with the adoption, attachment issues. Every child who's adopted eventually wants, I shouldn't say every child, but vast majority of them will actually want to reconnect with their birth parents if at all possible. It's a pretty normal thing for them to want to go through, but boy, it brings up a lot of emotions, a lot of deep-seated unsureties and self-esteem issues and things like that, and questions in their mind that they don't know how to deal with. And so I would recommend that you get your son into a counselor or a therapist as soon as possible. And as far as the program goes, a short-term program that deals with those kind of things, you'd want to call certainly my program. If you look at the web, wherehealingstarts.com, and look at the Aspiro track, because there's multiple programs listed there, it's the one that you would probably want to look at and talk to our admissions director, Josh Watson, and see if there's something that, if that would be a good fit for you. If not, we're happy to help refer you on to an educational consultant or someone else out there that would be able to help you find the proper resources in your life.
Yeah, I agree. And this one, I think, sort of had just a little bit of the stalking part only, but it's a birth parent who has come back into their family and is trying to kind of do some of the same things, which is to alienate, you know, again, the parents who have now raised him since he was a toddler.
Exactly.
Very sad situation. Now, I know you have a couple of particular cases in mind. If you could share those with us, and why don't you start with the one I believe you refer to as Michelle.
Yeah, well, Alan, you know this case because I've helped you've helped me with this one when we met down in Texas over this. It's been a complicated, ongoing case. The difficulty with getting help in this case is getting law enforcement to actually understand what's going on, because there's a fine line between criminal activity and harassment. And stalking laws vary from state to state to state. Some states have very well-written stalking laws, and other states are a little bit behind the times.
That's right. Well, let's set up the situation so that they can kind of see the situation, how it began, and then where the frustrations have come as the parents have tried to get out of that situation.
Okay, let's start back 3 years ago. This young lady is 18 years old now. She just barely turned 18. When she was 15, she was getting all A's and B's in school, very hard worker in school, was very athletic in track and soccer. She was on track at that point to be a collegiate soccer player, was being recruited by club teams in the Texas area and captain of her teams even at in a very large high school in Texas as a freshman. She was coming on and being a captain of the team and so forth. And so she had a lot going for her. She still does, but we're trying to recover from some lost time right now. In the process of that, the young man who became her stalker was about 4 years older than her. And what he did is he used the internet because she was being promoted as a soccer player. She had a lot of stuff being out on the internet that helped that promotion process. And so he used the internet to kind of learn all about her, her friends, her soccer team. This young man had been a soccer player himself, so he knew soccer quite well. We later discovered that the mother of this young man actually helped pick Michelle. So the family had quite a bit of involvement in this in this process as well. And so then from there, what this young man did is he started hanging out around the soccer fields, learning her practice schedules, learning what her friends did, learned what, you know, got connected into her MySpace account and so forth and so on, to the point where he knew a lot about her, started learning her friends, everything, and he drove nice cars. He appeared to have money. He was a good-looking young man, and so, of course, all of her friends are sitting there saying, hey, this guy's got a crush on you. We're so jealous of you. You're so lucky, because here's a freshman in high school that's got a guy that's out of high school already looking at her and so forth. So they, she started to, quote-unquote, fall in love, if that's possible, at 15 years old. And as she did so, the relationship began. Now, with that, immediately, one of the first things as we kind of uncovered the case is, again, I can't overemphasize the parent alienation piece. That was one of the very first things that he started to do with her, is to get her to turn against her parents and not want to spend time with them and not want to talk to them about anything that's going on in her life, and so forth. And so that was one of the big first steps that took place.
Now, were you able to find these out through emails and things like that at a later date?
With the help of a private investigator and some of our resources, we were able to go back into her MySpace, her emails, her phone records, and start to uncover and piece all the pieces together and put the story together, yes.
Okay. Now, when you or the people and the parent, the family, everybody involved, when they started approaching the other family, how did they approach it?
The parents of Michelle, actually, when they started, first of all, by the time that they realized there was a problem, they could feel that things weren't right with their daughter, but they didn't know why. And being a typical parent, and I'm no different, so when I say mm-hmm. typical, I make the same mistakes as a parent. But as a typical parent, they just wanted to let her have her space, and she, just kind of chalked it up to teenage, and she's, fighting for her independence, and that she just needed her space, and so forth. And so through that process, they just kind of backed off and let her be, and not realizing what was taking place. And that as they started to uncover this and started checking their own cell phone records, that was their first clue that all these phone calls were going out to a different phone number mm-hmm. that they didn't know. And they got online and did some reverse phone lookups and things like that, and started to put names together. And so as they started to piece it all together and approach their daughter about this, they, she came clean and kind of said, yes, I've got a boyfriend and this is who it is, and so forth and so on. And so, the parents did. They took action and went and talked to the boy and to the family. And in this particular case, the family actually kind of same story as what you had from one of your listeners, is the family said, let them be. And, told them that you're overreactive parents and you're just conservative and you need to back off and so forth. And,
Right. And their 19-year-old son, it should be okay for him to be with their 15-year-old daughter.
Exactly. Yeah. And in that process, this was a good girl who had never dated. Per se, she was really a pretty girl, is a pretty girl, but she had really never dated much because she's 15 and so involved with sports and other athletic events that she was just occupied all the time. And then as she started to date this young man, it took him about 3 to 4 months before he had convinced her to have sex with him. And so at 15 years old, she was having her first sexual encounters and going on. And from there, he was convincing her to make a plan. And part of that plan was that, I guess, this event took place in Texas, and some of the way the laws read down there, and child's rights at 17, especially if a 17-year-old gets pregnant, that right. they can go off and get married without their parents' consent. And so part of the plan was that he had talked her into running away on her 17th birthday. And that if her parents tracked them down, that they would just get pregnant, so that parents couldn't do anything about it.
Wow, nice life plan.
Yes, exactly.
Well, take us through now from 15 to 17. What were the parents trying to do, and what was hindering them?
Well, a big piece of it, this guy was smart. This was not his first victim. This young man at that point in time, when he first met Michelle, she was 15 and he was 19. But he had already done this a couple other times, and so he was getting smart. He knew what the laws were. He knew how to manipulate and navigate through the system. He knew how to give expensive gifts and promises of money and fast cars, and we're going to move to Miami where it's warm and live in a beach house and promise, you know, all these promises of a great life. And so through the process, as the parents started uncovering it, at first, you know, they used cell phone records to start to do to uncover it. And one of his things that he did is, you know, he bought her another cell phone. And so for a while, you know, they had two cell phones. Well, mom and dad finally got wise and caught on that there was a second cell phone. Well, from there, it was hard to hide two cell phones and her belongings. So from there, what she ended up doing is they just got a cell phone that had the same, you know, an AT&T plan on an AT, you know, in her.
Right.
And they just switched out SIM cards. So now they have one cell phone, used a second SIM card. And so she would just slide in the second SIM card into her current phone at night and be able to text, message, and call. And her parents didn't have the ability to track the records and the communication. Part of the other problem is that this guy knew the school system well enough, and you know, between him and his mother helping him, he was able to check her out of school during school hours, legitly, not legitly for the school, but you know, they would check her out just right through the front door. It wasn't like she was skipping school, and just say she had a medical doctor's appointment they had to take her to, and so they'd go spend the whole day together while they were skipping school.
Well, now that one. That one kind of surprises me, because I know that, you know, from my experience with the school, I mean, the parents have to list who can legitimately check her out.
So somehow this young man was smart enough and manipulative enough that he got his mother's name onto that list without the parents knowing it.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, at that point, hopefully there was some legal action against that mother.
It's been an ongoing battle, and you know, honestly, it's in my 22 years in working this business, I've had nothing but incredible support from law enforcement and teamwork and partnership. In this particular case, we've actually had a difficult time getting the right support.
Right. Yeah. And it would seem like they have some contacts in high places.
Yes. That's exactly, actually, if you know the whole story, that is involved.
Right. Yeah, and I know you're kind of tiptoeing through it, so that's why I'm not kind of pushing. I just, as long as the people out there realize that's, you know, if you're thinking about it going, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, now add that last component, and I think you can put it together as to what's been going on.
Yeah, so through this piece, though, that one of the things that was happening, you know, is the mom and dad really were trying to communicate with their daughter. They knew that, you know, again, if you can use that phrase from before, that she used to be this way. And they knew that something had changed. They, at this point, in the later stages of it, they knew why it had changed. They were really trying to do all that they could to parent her, to talk with her, and so forth. But the young man was so powerful in his manipulations, all he was able to, you know, he just kept turning Michelle against her parents. And so now you're not only dealing with the parent alienation, you're just dealing with some bad attitude, her wanting to run away. You know, she would say, I'm with so-and-so and my friends, we're spending the night. And of course, she wasn't really at that house. She was at somebody else's house so that she could see him and so forth and so on. And so it was a real mess that I, you know, as I've uncovered this, the parents really were doing all that they could. But honestly, again, go back to technology and some of the systems that were being used, is the parents got blindsided. They couldn't have seen this coming. He was smart enough and manipulative enough that.
Well, where is it at today?
Well, in the process of this one, the parents did uncover, through one of the Michelle's friends, did uncover their plan to run away at 17. And in that process, they knew that they had to act quickly. And this was a girl that, so they made arrangements to put her into our program. Ironically, when she came into our program, she didn't know she was coming. But with the day that she came in, it was like a huge relief to her. She was like, finally, I don't really have to go through with this. I don't have to play this game anymore. And within a week of her coming into our program, she was divulging everything that had happened. And she was saying, you know, yes, I think I love this guy, but I really did never want to marry him. I wanted to go off to college. I want to play soccer. I want my life. I don't want to get married till I'm 25, not 17. And, mm-hmm. and so it was like a huge, huge burden off of her shoulders and a relief to get out of the situation and for somebody to finally have taken control for her.
Exactly. And that's actually one of the issues that that I bring up from time to time, and I think many of the parents have to realize it, is there really is that need and desire for structure. You know, is much as teenagers, we say that we want to rebel against it. I know I did. You know, most of us think that that's what we want. But when it comes right down to it, I think the structure is what they need. And oftentimes what I'm seeing, even from the standpoint of us just picking them up and transporting them, there's that same sense of relief of, oh, they just take a deep breath and go, you know, now I don't have to worry about those decisions. I don't have to make all those decisions that have complicated my life. And I'm glad to hear in this situation that it didn't take long at all for her to realize, you know, that having this structure was going to better her life.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and Alan, you know this because you've done transports for students for so many years and so forth, but one of the interesting things that I see with kids all the time is when they first come in, the first 24 hours or so, they're angry usually. Mm-hmm. They're mad. They're blaming everyone else. Usually the parents are the big bad guys yeah. and taking all the blame for it. And, you know, within a week to 2 weeks of being in our programs, you know, you'll ask the young man or young woman, say, if you were the parent of a 15-year-old son just like you, what would you do? And almost 100% will always say, well, I would do exactly what my parents just did. I would put me in a program just like this to get some help. And even though they're angry about it because they've just been taken away from their friends, from their school environment, everything that they thought was so important, you give them a little bit of time away from those things, and all of a sudden it's a relief to them. It's a burden off their shoulders, and they actually agree. I'm sure it's not 100%, but it's darn close to 100% yep. of the time the student is sitting there saying, yes, I would do exactly what my parents just did.
Well, and I couldn't agree more, and I run into that also at times in which I've seen kids after the fact when they've come out of programs. And in fact, some years ago when I got involved in some legislation, we recontacted a lot of the kids that had gone through programs, and there was an incredibly high percentage of kids that said just that, you know, I absolutely support the fact that my parents did this, as angry as I might have been at the very beginning. You know, this became something that was very positive to me. One of the girls that I was most impressed with, and she came with us to Sacramento and testified before the Senate, and her testimony was more powerful than anything any of us adults could say. She said, I am now 16 years old. At 12 years old, I was having sex with adult males. I was doing drugs. I was not coming home at night. My mother took the initiative to put me in a program. I was not happy about it at that time. But since that time, I got in a program. I became, my schooling was escalated so quickly that at 16, I have now graduated. And I have offers from Boston College and Stanford for scholarship to go into college.
Wow.
I mean, she was a brilliant girl. And then she stopped and she paused and she looked at them, at the Senate, and this is an intimidating thing for a 16-year-old, and she said, had my mother not done this, I would be at your expense, either on welfare, in jail, or pregnant, or dead. So, you know, my mother had every right to do this, it was the right thing to do, and at 12 years old, I may not have liked it, but it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah, we hear stories like that all the time, and I like one of my students just recently, he articulated something really well that I kind of smiled at. He says, you know, the problem with my mom and dad is they knew that things were going wrong, but they only knew the tip of the iceberg. They only knew 10%. They didn't know the other 90%, and now that I'm with you guys, we can get the 90% out on the table, and it feels good. And I think that's a feeling that almost every student goes through, is it actually feels good to get it out on the table, get it over with, and start to move forward in a positive way.
That's great. And I love that we're on the subject of feeling good. We're going to take a break right now. We will be back shortly. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back. And before we talk with Randy a little more, I want to do a little bit of a plug for the World Association of Detectives. I am the chairman of the board, and we are having the World Investigators Networking Reception. This is an opportunity to meet and network with industry professionals in a light, relaxed atmosphere at the Panorama Terrace of the Hyatt Pier 66 Resort and Spa in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Our theme for that evening is the white and khaki. The white and khaki on margaritas. Now, for those investigators or those that are very interested in investigation, law enforcement people who may be looking towards a career in investigation, this is an excellent opportunity for you to meet investigators from around the world. We have investigators in, I believe it's 70 countries that are part of the World Association. There will be many of them there. This is a great opportunity, and for more information in regards to that, you can go to www.wad.net. It's the World Investigators Networking Reception. It will be at the beginning of the World Association of Detectives midterm board meeting. This will be March 26th through 29th, and that again, that's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Again, any information, either go to that website or you can call me. You can call me on my cell at 714-325-1969, and I will get you more information. And Randy, we are back. And again, going back to our story in regards to Michelle, can you go ahead and kind of wrap it up? Where are they at today? And what have the parents gone through? How has this taken a toll on them?
Well, to help you understand what the parents have gone through, the best are some of the more intriguing parts of the story of just still unfolding. It actually took place the day that I met the parents and Michelle at the airport here in Salt Lake City. One of the things that we sat down with Michelle and we explained to her what was happening and why it was happening, and her parents explained to her that it was their choice and so forth. And so she got in the car, and the boyfriend in this case was just calling her on her cell phone, and we said, Michelle, we need to take your cell phone and as part of coming into our program and so forth. And so we took her cell phone. And so I'm sitting now in the airport with the parents and with the cell phone. And all of a sudden, all these text messages start coming through from the boyfriend. And at this point, the parents had described some of the behaviors that were taking place. But in the reality is, I didn't know if this is just a bad relationship, if this overprotective parents, are they exaggerating some of these things? And so the text messages started coming through. And in the next hour, while I was sitting with the parents at the airport, there was almost 90 text messages that came through.
Wow.
And so they were coming through every few seconds. And some of them, they were all revolved around, where are you? What are you doing? Earlier when I talked to you on the phone, because she was talking to her boyfriend on the phone at the airport, and all of a sudden one of my staff members, who was a male, came up and started to talk to her. So he heard another male's voice. predators and stalkers will always be very, very possessive, very mm-hmm. jealous. And in the process of that, all of a sudden he's calling her names that we won't repeat on the radio, saying, where are you? What's that other guy doing there? You're lying to me. You're cheating on me. You know, this, that, and the other. And so he goes through. So I'm watching all these text messages go through while I'm sitting with his parents. And the parents, of course, are in an emotional state. So we're trying to help them understand and you know, cope with things as well. And I keep watching these text messages. And it was at that moment that I said, wow, this is more than just a bad relationship. This guy really is off his rocker. He's wacko. And so as we got going through, to kind of make a long story short, since over the last year, this case is still going on. It doesn't go away. It's one of the messages that you have to understand is that once you get into this situation, some of the research shows that it's at least an 18-month process. Mm-hmm. Another piece of research that I've seen is more like a 4-year process of the stalking and the predator behaviors that will continue on. And in this process, one of the manipulations that he had always pulled with her, because ironically, at some points she had started to say, this is too much for me. I want to break up with you. And this was before they were going to run off at 17 and go off on their own. And so one of the things that he would do with her is every time she would start to get antsy and start to say, I can't handle this. We need to take some time mm-hmm. apart or something like that. He would pull the, you know, I love you. You're the only thing in my life. And if I can't live with you, I can't live without you. And so I'm going to go drive my car really fast and wreck, or I'm going to commit suicide or something like that. So he would use these manipulations and basically say that, you know, I'm going to commit suicide and it's going to be your fault that I commit suicide. Now, as people on the outside, we look in and say, well, okay, go commit suicide or whatever you got to do. And, you know, that'll end this problem. You know, but obviously as a young girl she felt like she would be personally responsible for his actions at that point in time, which we know to be wrong, but she didn't know that. And so he would pull this card that I could commit suicide. So about 24 hours later, we've gone to the airport. Mom and Dad have gotten on an airplane and headed back to Texas where they were from. And I've got the cell phone. So I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden, the first message comes across. Now, he doesn't know what's taking place. He just knows right. that she's not responding to his messages and his phone calls, and that's not acceptable to him.
Right. And he's heard a male voice.
So now she's off running around with some other guy in his mind. So the next messages come across the cell phone, both voicemails and text messages, and it's, you know, it's the mother. And the mother saying that, you know, something bad has happened. There's been a car accident, and we don't know if he's going to live.
Oh.
And so, you know, and I thought about it for a moment. So I called the parents and said, well, this is what's coming across. You know, what do you want to do about it? And said, well, let's at least check the hospitals, area hospitals. And so we started making some phone calls. And, of course, there's been no accident and no incident of any kind. Well, over the last year, just to kind of, again, long mm-hmm. story short, but over the last year, this young man's almost died 3 different times. All 3 were faked incidences. One was very, very elaborate. And this was that the last one took place, I believe, in June. So this was almost 6 months after we first had picked up Michelle and started working with her. And at that point in time, I was with Michelle, and she, the phone message is starting to come through that this young man had, you know, he's been in another car accident. And, you know, ironically, even though she had been through a lot of therapy and had really gotten strong and was getting her life back in order and so forth, she started to fall for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at Michelle and started laughing and said, Michelle, this is the same old gig. He's right. still trying. And, you know, she kind of go, oh, it is the same old thing and so forth. And so long.
Well, but you brought up a good point from the standpoint, you know, the investigative side of this is, you know, by checking the hospitals and everything else, you're in a position now to speak from a factual point, you know, is that, you know, if the other side is saying, well, yeah, but this really happened. No, it didn't. They're not in any hospitals. All the information that's, you know, it says that the accident was on Highway 40 or whatever it was. You know, we've checked with Highway Patrol. There's no accident like that. We've checked his license plate. There's no accident like that. We've run in the same thing. And as an investigator, it's check out all the things that are happening. Show that it's not accurate so that they realize it's all a ruse.
Well, the funny thing in this last case is he'd gotten smarter. And so there really had been an accident. And it was on the, you know, he said it was on the George Bush Highway in Dallas, Texas, and there really had been an accident. There really had been an ambulance called and so forth. So he was able to verify that the ambulance, you know, really happened, but obviously he wasn't there. And so, she at that point, normally we encourage just no contact, end it all, but she was at a state where she kind of had to know. Was mm-hmm. something really happening or not? And so I said, why don't you just text him and say, you know, what hospital are you in? He texted back and said, you know, I'm in ICU and that I just need to hear your voice. Please call me. And I kind of laughed and said, you know, first of all, every ICU I've ever been in doesn't allow cell phones.
That's right.
And they said, so text him back and say, what's the hospital's phone number? And so finally, several text messages went back and forth. And finally, she texted him and said, no, what nurse can I talk to at what hospital about your condition? Because I think you're lying to me again. Uh-huh.
Good for her.
Yeah, she stood up to him and so forth. Now, through this process, by her choice, it was something that is one of the things as a parent that you want them just to be told they have to cut off the relationship and end it right then. And it doesn't work that way. You do have to work them through the process.
Right.
It has to be their choice. And in this case, she had written letters to him requesting, saying, yes, we're broken up, no more contact, don't ever contact me again. She did it in writing. She did it over a phone conversation and so forth. And the problem was that this guy is a true stalker. Mm-hmm. So to put it in perspective, you ask the question of what happened, what's the family dealing with? Well, in the process of this, Michelle went through our programs at Aspiral and really came alive and got the help that she needed, became very goal-oriented and everything else. And when we got done with our program, we felt very confident that she was strong enough. She was kind of becoming who she used to be mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
Not altogether, because she had lost a couple years of her life, but she was back on track and things were going really positively. The downside was that this guy was still stalking the house in Texas and was going at it daily. And through that process, the guy's coming up into right outside the house, but he knows that if he steps on the lawn, that's trespassing and so forth. But he won't step on the lawn, but he can park his car out in the street and just sit there quietly and just kind of harass the family by his presence. And
right.
He would use his other friends. So he knew what to do that wasn't breaking the law.
Right. Didn't he also, I think he emailed them a picture of a gun?
Yes. Yes. There was that was just as late as of Christmas time. So mm-hmm. Almost a full year later. He's sending messages, kind of not making straightforward statements of saying that, you know, I'm going to do something here, but making these insinuations that, he actually made the statement to her personally saying that if I can't have you, nobody else will.
Right. And, you know, I think one of the saddest things about this involving his parents is the fact that they can't see this as something that they should have helped him. In other words, rather than really truly helping them, if they would have got him help and said, look, you have an obsessive compulsive issue or you have whatever, and get him to see some professionals, he might have a better chance to have a normal life. But based on all the information, they are, you know, they're playing into all of it. You know, they're feeding it even more and more and more and acknowledging it as if it's, you know, a normal experience. And it's not. But the family is really, they're doing as much damage to their own son as they are to the other people involved.
Oh, absolutely. And I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect that it's a generational issue, that if the apple probably hasn't fallen far from the tree.
Sounds right. You know what? We've got about 3 minutes. Can you believe that?
Wow.
okay, let's, and actually there was one more question. And I think I can even answer it a little bit. But it says, you know, my adorable 8-year-old daughter has had abandonment issues from where her bipolar mother left her when she was just 2 years old. Often she cries and throws tantrums when she doesn't get her way or when I try to make her do her homework. Even the teachers have a hard time disciplining her. We believe her self-esteem and confidence are extremely low. Do you have a program that provides for a child this young?
The answer is really simple on my end is no, I do not have a program that provides, but there is help out there. The best thing you can do is contact either Alan or myself, and we're going to get you in a contact with a list of an educational consultant that has a clinical background and your area that's going to be able to find you all the resources, both locally and or across the country, depending on what your needs are. That's by far the best bet. That's what they do. They're good at it.
I agree. And so you can, in the same area, same place that you sent this question in, you can go to the blog at answersforthefamily.com. That's answers, the numeral for thefamily.com. We appreciate everybody's questions. We love the fact that you're giving us questions that we can ask our guests in the same sense. Something like this, we can also refer you to an educational consultant. Or, as Randy said, you can go to his website and speak to someone there. And Randy, if you can give that to us again.
Say www.wherehealingstarts.com.
That's great. Again, we've got just a few seconds. Is there anything else that you would like to add in regards to your program or information you'd like to get out to some of the professionals and the families out there listening?
Basically, to any family that's listening, if your gut instincts are telling you that something's not right, follow it. Make some phone calls, even calling. There's a ton of people out there that'll do this and help you, but even calling our admissions director, even if you're not a good fit for one of our programs or something that we can help you directly with, we're going to point you in the right direction.
That's great. Randy, I got to tell you, this has been great having you here. It's an issue that I think really isn't being addressed. And I know that the issue of the type of stalker that actually comes, stalks your child, takes them and runs away, that issue is addressed. That issue gets addressed on television. We've dealt with it as investigators. But I think this is something that is happening out there. Parents don't realize it. And with the social networks out there, it's really only going to get worse if they don't have the proper communication with their children. All right. And with that, actually, we've got about 15 seconds. Again, we are Answers for the Family. You can reach us at answers, the numeral for thefamily.com. We appreciate your questions. We appreciate your listening and look forward to having you listening again. Perfect.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.